Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. What I love about Shopify is basically how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. I know we use Shopify here at Betches, and honestly, anyone with any kind of business could really benefit from Shopify. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/betches, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/betches now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/betches.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Welcome to So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, the podcast where we cover all the pop culture we love to hate, from the classic reality TV moments of the past and present to the latest Daily Mail headlines and everything in between. We'll dive into all the infamous and notorious messes you can't stop watching. I'm looking at you, Jax Taylor. I'm your host, Ryan Bailey.
Stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets, the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5.
Reach to your heart when you say You guys, welcome to an all-new So Bad It's Good, and we have a special guest today, and here's the deal. This special guest, if you like us right now, we're telling you there is a moment to see us again live, not in a podcasting form, but through the technology that James Cameron used in the movie Avatar and Avatar 2, The Way of Water, through the computer. You know her from one of your favorite Bravo podcasts, and we were just talking about this show we were doing, and she had a pre-show where she was meeting fans, and she was talking about they were going really deep, and it was kind of beautiful, and I love that about her and her podcast is that she goes deep on things and I go really surface level. So together, I think that's going to be a perfect combination. And we got some, I don't know if we're going to be able to say who else is on the show. We'll talk to her. But anyways, from Andy's Girls, Sarah Galley, welcome back to So Bad It's Good.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to get through all the layers, superficial, deep, extra deep, skin stuff. I am thrilled to be here. Thrilled to be here, Ryan Bailey.
So we're doing this show tomorrow. Let's just get the plugs out of the way, which will be like, so it's $12 today, but you're going to hear this tomorrow. So if you haven't gotten it yet, it's going to be $15. And where do they get tickets? Because you guys, it's 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Is that right?
Yeah. Sorry. I was,
okay.
I was
sorry. Sarah looked like she was like
no, the biggest
O face. I was like, oh no, did I get the time wrong?
No, I was stretching my draw. I forgot that you could see.
You guys, this is the beauty of podcasting. Just know she made the biggest O shape that you've ever seen with her face.
Hello,
ever.
Gentlemen, if you're listening. Yeah, sorry. Yep.
$15 to see Sarah holler. Yay! No.
It's really a show. Yeah.
What if I offend Sarah on this podcast before the live show? That'll be good for tension.
Oh my
and
God,
you
yes.
can ask me where I got my black eye. Sarah, so this show, where do we get tickets? Because they're going to hear this today, and I want the baddies to come out and party with us. How do they get the tickets?
I want to see the baddies and the AGs unite at our sassy little live show, A Moment, which is going to be online, depending on when you're listening to this, on Thursday, also known as Tonight-ish, at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard. And you can get those $15 tickets at moment.co/AndysGirls. That's moment.co/AndysGirls. And if you say to yourself, oh my God, I can't go at that time, but I want to see it, you have a full week if you buy at the same price on-demand tickets. And this is content that won't be on So Bad
Andy's
It's
Girls.
Good. It won't be on Andy's Girls. It's exclusive to Moment, A Moment with Moment. And I'm so excited.
So whatever we do, basically, you will not hear on this podcast or your podcast. And so and by the way, I just got to tell you guys, I regrew my beard, and this will be one of the first opportunities to see the beard, not just the creepy motorcycle man mustache, but the beard entirely. It's a lot of salt and pepper. So that's exciting. Plus, there's a special guest. I don't know if you're allowed. Are you teasing this special guest?
We are able to announce in an exclusive announcement to the baddies. Who is going to be joining us?
Who is it?
Well, you know, it is Erev Jen Shah, as my people, the Shalomers, call it, the night before Jen Shah's sentencing. So we will be having legal commentator and universal badass Emily D. Baker on this live show the night before Jen Shah's sentencing, which I plan to attend, to talk to us about what she thinks is going to happen.
That, I mean, really, truly, you cannot get a better guest than Emily D. Baker the night before. That 'twas the night before Jen.
Literally.
And by the way, I don't know if you've been working for the last couple of hours, like setting up this show and stuff, but there has been so many updates in the Jen Shah. Like, there has been so many push announcements through TMZ. Turns out in 2019, Jen Shah was the show didn't make Jen Shah bad, which is what her court documents would like to say. But there has been a thing that is going to get unsealed potentially where she was cheating on Coach Shah. And she's making the biggest O face again, you guys.
Okay, so I heard about documents that I guess the government or somebody was filing to unseal. And forgive me if I'm fucking this up.
Please. This is why. No, this is why Emily DeBaker will be excellent.
We need someone. We need an adult in the room to be like, settle down,
I'm
children.
Like, why are you sealing these in the first place? Let's just keep everything unsealed. Yeah.
I mean, so I had heard that there were something about documents needing to be unsealed, and someone who had, I guess, read potentially Jen's declaration and maybe Coach Shaw's of like why I did the thing I did and like excuses, and decided to at the last possible minute come forward, someone who the government I think hadn't spoken to previously, who wanted to rebut Jen's character statement, which is, to me, very surprising. I know that a friend of ours, the Bravo Docket, did a deep dive on this. And then I just, as you said, I've been offline for a couple hours. I just went online and Face Reality 16, another one of our content creator friends.
Yeah, I love her. Yeah.
Also just posted about it. So I literally just saw, and then we connected, I literally just saw, like, Jen was, like, maybe having an affair and showing up at somebody's house.
She crossed state lines to... She crossed state lines to beat this lady's ass because this lady sent screenshots of her with this other dude to Coach Shaw. And she was like, and the girl wasn't answering her. So she went to Vegas. She crossed state lines and showed up this girl's house in 2019, which is before the show. So the thing that I find interesting about this, you guys, and if you've listened to the show, in those court documents that her team filed, it paints a Jen Shaw that was also changed by the show, that she plays a character, that character is not real, she does it for the show. And for me, I have a weird, like, I take offense to that for many reasons, but mostly because I love Bravo, and how dare you blame the show on your actual behavior and persona that was created way before the show was. Does that make sense?
It does. I'm struggling. So an affair potentially happened prior to... Potentially happened prior to the show filming.
Yeah, like this... allegedly, this had been going on for a bit. And that's why they... But if you remember the first season, they hinted at Jen Shaw with another man in the same breath that they had hinted at Meredith Marks with another man. Remember Jen Shaw saying, like, the New York man... that they kept, like, bandying about. So it was hinted at in season one, and we kind of, like, all forgot about it. But now this kind of gives more credence to that. It's going to be really interesting, but this is, like, the worst possible time for this to happen to Jen Shaw, because they've requested 3 to 5 years. Southern District requested 10 to 12 years. And they said, I'd read on somebody else, maybe it was at Face Reality 16 as well, is that they had heard, maybe Bravo Snarkside, that they had heard that the judge sentencing is very lenient with their sentences. So I'm really curious what Emily DeBaker has to say about that as well. And if this really does, will come into play. And did this just happen at the last minute, or did they hold it for like a last minute sneak attack? The Southern District was like, you won't be able to combat this in time.
So who said that Judge Stein is lenient on sentences? They were looking.
It was like Bravo Snarkside or Face. It was one of the Instagram accounts. And listen, I know you're like, don't believe everything you read. I'm just saying, I'm curious from Emily DeBaker tomorrow night if that's actually something that you take into account. And that's why maybe the Southern District said we need a little extra oomph to really put her away as the ringleader. The other thing you need to know, Sarah, is that tonight was an horrible episode of Salt Lake. But at the very end, it said, next week on the season finale of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City. It's over next week. And they show Jen changing, like they have Jen changing her plea.
On the finale next week.
Well, they have her coming out of the courthouse after she changed her plea. And they have a bunch of scenes with Jen, with Meredith, Heather, and Seth. And Meredith going, I think there's a high probability she did it, you know? And like, I don't know about the victims.
Okay. Well, that sounds like
something I feel like
wild.
You just woke up from like a 20-year nap and I'm having to explain to you. I'm like, get this, kid, what else has happened? Our government is shut down almost. Have you heard about that?
I did hear about the government, but like this own universe It's honestly wild. I haven't seen tonight's episode yet, but I saw like a small preview of a preview of it in a scene with Heather and Angie H. And I literally watched 20 seconds of it and was like, I'm good. And then stopped because I was so uncomfortable for both of them, also known as myself.
It's just odd. There's a scene, Sarah. Let me just explain. They're in Jen Shaw, Meredith, and Heather are in a bathroom at the very beginning, and Heather's like, they don't. You know what? You know what'll get them to shut up about you, Jen, is if I say if I bring up my black eye again, and then she goes, you know what it is? I'm loyal to my friends, and she does this really weird hand motion like she's slapping an ass, and it's so awkward and weird, and What do you think, and you'll come at this from a different kind of more adult perspective than I will, what do you think about the relationship between Jen Shaw and Heather Gay? As a female, other female friendships you've been in, what is this that we're seeing?
I don't recognize it as something I have seen gender specific or otherwise. I mean, I think that there are different ways that are experiences within like the spectrum of womanhood where relationships women can have with each other can be enormously complicated. BCC, all mothers and daughters in the universe until the end of time. But I don't understand it. I have had conversations on AG, which is a podcast devoted to the psychology behind The Real Housewives. We like deep dive into the minutiae and the nuance that is where we dance every episode. And I find it inexplicable to try to figure out how Heather, who has been truly America's sweetheart for so many of us, now seems to find a lot of glee in aligning with Jen, specifically seemingly against Lisa and Whitney, to the point where it's like there's such a lack of acknowledgement of what Jen is dealing with while they seem to like feast on the bones of rumors and speculation about
scraps.
Their foes. Yeah, it's the longest non-answer that you will hear until the next one, which is I really cannot figure it out, except it is mystifying to me the way that Heather seems to be really finding joy in
and also the misdirection, like throwing people the wrong way in protection of Jen. Now, there's a rumor going around that you were very much the same way at BravoCon with female podcasters. You were getting topless and getting all drunk and dancing around just like Heather and Jen.
Yeah,
were.
I'm a good time girl as a VIP level. I'm a good time girl over in the back of the room at Beverly Hills. Yeah.
In the season finale, a preview for next week, they bring up that there was potentially a rumor of a sexual relationship between Heather and Jen. And
what?
That was in. Yeah. I mean, listen, who knows at this point? It's all a mess and you can't really believe anything that people are bringing up on camera, which is sad. But, you know, that would explain maybe the scratches it would explain. I'm trying to think of like the sexually aggressiveness of that, because there is something. I don't know, like maybe Jen makes Heather feel amazing. I don't know. I was trying to like make it work in my head. I don't care either way. It's just one of those weird things of why is it a secret on a show about reality?
Well, I mean, I think that people have discussed there being some sexual undertones to their dynamic, which you could kind of see in the way that they were partying before everything went away, before it became the next morning. There was a way that they were like, not flirting with each other, but I don't know, communicating in with each other in a way that maybe can raise questions. And neither of us think about it in the frame of like trying to use that as a vehicle to shame or say anything else, except from like, who knows what happened, because this is what happens when there's no clarity provided and when these women seem to delight in raising additional questions instead of actually just providing a straight answer as to what took place. So, of course, people are going to have insinuations or questions or conjecture about what occurred because nobody knows.
I'm just really interested for you to watch this, which will be exciting to talk to you tomorrow night, because you come from an acting background as well. And, you know, just Heather's talking heads have started to really feel like bad acting. Not bad Mormon, but bad acting. And I don't know if you have felt the same, because she used to come off so natural and effortless, and now it's just like, it's this weird, like, Rinna-esque fakery of, like, look at me, be smarter than you, but it's bad acting? Does that ring true at all to you?
Yeah, it does, in a way that makes me incredibly uncomfortable because of the topics that Heather is choosing to continually include and discuss. Like, it goes from LOL, making a joke, punchline, for lack of a better phrase, to something terrible happened, to I fear for my safety, which is not something one should be joking about, to I don't remember what happened, to of course I remember what happened, to I need to come up with an excuse to protect the other women, which I'm clearly not including Jen and Meredith in, to the other women absolutely know what happened, to they don't. It is confusing, and it feels deliberately so, and it's hard to figure out if that deliberate movement is happening to protect someone else in the cast, or it's just happening because Heather thinks this would make good TV. And I think the reality is, no matter what happened, this is terrible TV. And I think a lot of us feel very uncomfortable, including content creators, who are like, I don't want to be in a position to use my voice as a woman to say that another one is misrepresenting the truth when I don't know what the truth is. But Heather is saying so many different things that all counter to each other, and we're not actually getting a counter from production as to what occurred.
Yeah, that. Well, I was almost wondering if production was going to let her hang herself in a way. And I felt like there was this weird contentious relationship with production and some of the cast members this season. And I especially think so now that they're going to end next week's episode. I was like, oh, maybe production is building a case where they're letting it seem this way. And then all of a sudden they're going to start, like, it's going to start coming down the mountain, and you're going to realize how much of an idiot Jen and Heather and these people have been. But now all of a sudden I feel like we're now at the end next week. And I thought we had 4 more episodes at least. So I was a little confused about that, but it just feels very sloppy. I want to, though, take it back to, like, when you started watching Bravo. Like, what drew you to Bravo, and how is it different now than it was when you fell in love with it in the first place?
That's a great question. I started watching Housewives season 1 of Orange County. I'm an OG of the OC.
And that's like 17 years ago.
That's like, yeah, I was 3. And I started watching it because at the time I was a big fan of Desperate Housewives, and that's the way that the show was being positioned, as a real life version of this enormously successful ABC quasi, like, soap opera style scripted series. And I found myself really connecting with different forms of reality that I did not myself have, like the different relationships, different lifestyles, like escapism in all of the forms, be it all, you know, it could be financial or societal or whatever it is. I found those almost like archetypes to be really interesting. But the through line for me has always been the idea of conflict resolution, and how that's magnified over time when Housewives became a big fucking hit. Like, the idea of how much of
did
this
you know
conflict,
you were watching a hit at the time?
No, definitely not. No. And neither did they. Neither did anybody involved from the first reunion on, or the little talk back when they were in those, like, Hollywood style chairs with Andy
big
on
chairs,
Orange County. It wasn't a thought to me. It wasn't a community at that point or a universe. It was just a show. And so the transition into the world of Bravo, like the greater BravoCon of it all, has been amazing and surprising and shocking, because I don't think that's what any of us considered it to, you know, to be or have that kind of potential when it started.
Because I noticed you don't do a podcast about Desperate Housewives, you know, like, I mean, that got you into this.
Yeah.
And this actually had more legs than Desperate Housewives. When did you start realizing that this was actually making this cultural kind of moment, a pop culture moment? But also, like you said, you were attracted to these characters, the conflict resolution. When did you realize that, you know, how many seasons in did you realize, like, damn, this is really, do you remember, like, was it a franchise itself? Was it a, you know, you have four franchises on and then you're like, damn, this is really something. And when did you want to start being a part of it in a bigger way?
Oof. Another.
I told you. I was going to hit you, babe. I gave you a little nudie stuff with the
wow, wow, wow. Sneak attack. My God.
Here's the deal. It's like, these are things that I actually wonder about you too. And I want to know what your evolution was or your superhero origin story was, because you now are one of the people that really talks so intelligently about these shows that we love and gives context for them. But where did that start? Like, what made you even think that that was something you wanted to do?
I think selfishly, probably The Real Housewives of New York. Because as someone who went to school here, I studied musical theater here in the city and stayed for most of the years that followed, there was something really fun about watching these women dine and fight and shop at places that I would walk by every day or that I myself would experience. I thought that was like the connective thread of New York City, a la Sex and the City, New York City as the sixth, seventh, or eighth housewife, you know, in the ways that New York City played such a important role for Carrie Bradshaw and her friends. And I think because the women on New York all seemed so powerful and vocal and strong. Like, I see a Jill Zarin type constantly, a Bethany Frankel post-success, pre-success type constantly. Ramona is as Ramona does. There's only one, thank God. But so many of these women are you can replicate an experience in the experiences of talking to New Yorkers. There's like a survival instinct, even for women with fucking shit tons of money, just in navigating New York. There are ways you can shield yourself from the reality of it, but oftentimes you can't be quote unquote protected from like seeing how the other half, aka 90%, live. And so that was always really interesting to me, just like the energy of the New York City show and like not getting Simon and being really creeped out by him at the beginning when he got that remember when he got that massage in the Hamptons and like his toes curled? A part of me died in that moment, I have to tell you. But it was just like the storytelling on it was fantastic.
But isn't it funny how we look back now and we're like, oh, I miss Simon? Like, isn't it interesting, like, how you actually, it, you know, after a decade or so, you're like, man, those were the golden era. That was, God, I mean, if I could just get them back, if I could just for one episode, just tell, you know, like, it's weird how we felt in that moment and how we feel all these years later. But also, maybe we wouldn't feel this way if we had given them more time on the show. Like, they would have really sealed their fate, but maybe being off the show protected them in the long run.
Yeah. And that's why I think, you know, Girls Trip has been so enjoyable for so many of us, because it's taking for many of the housewives, very, especially the first season, and obviously with Ex-Wives Club, very, very successful archetypes, very, very successful housewives figures, and putting them in an entirely new environment with people who have experienced housewives but are not necessarily members of their cast. And it's watching, like, through wonder and fear and maybe panic and anxiety and whatever else, these women try to navigate when maybe for 10 or so seasons they haven't had to do that, where it feels like you understand the mechanics of this, even if there are more people in the, even if there are different people in the cast, even if things are different and, you know, Brooks is there or whatever else, there's always going to be a change as alliances shift, friendships shift, and maybe marriages shift.
It freshens them up too. Yeah, it makes them. And that's why I'm kind of really curious about season three of Girls Trip, because Heather Gay is on that as well. And I feel like it was an immediate, ending second season of Salt Lake into third season of Girls Trip. And from what I hear, it's not a good season for her there as well.
Oh,
and I was
really
wondering if like, well, I was wondering if maybe she didn't have enough of a break, like even treating it like an athlete, like a sports player where they didn't have enough like downtime. So they went in with the bullshit that she was putting in season three of Salt Lake or whatever season this is Salt Lake and brought it over to Girls Trip. And it didn't work for her there either. If my sources about her are correct for this season. I just sometimes I love that thought, though, of like this kind of reignites their passion as well for the format or for the housewives in general. Some of these people we haven't seen for a long time.
Yeah. And it's something that I actually talked about with Lisa Barlow on the last online show. And I think it was Lisa who said this, like, the idea of, you know, why would I go on Girls Trip? Our franchise is too new. Now, obviously, you can process that as a lobbed insult at Heather for participating. But I also think there's a lot of truth there. And what we are experiencing with Salt Lake City, I feel like we shouldn't have to be experiencing this young into a franchise. But alternatively, how could we not? If these women, you know, quote unquote, grew up with housewives, think they understand the mechanics of the housewives game and have really either gotten a lot of fan support or conversely gotten a lot of fan critique, but nonetheless a lot of attention, absolutely they're going to start to perform. And maybe in the way that other housewives have performed the idea of like the housewife villain or the idea of the housewife hero, maybe for Heather, it's like she started to perform herself. And that's why it's so alien to some of us, both because it feels so disconnected from the Heather we first saw and also because it feels like a genuinely unnatural choice.
Yeah. You talk about gameplay almost, and does it frustrate you from being a day one to watch that the housewives has turned into like Survivor? And the other thought I wanted to talk to you about was the social media of it all. You said Salt Lake is still a young franchise, but they actually have to deal with social media, which the earlier iterations did not. So it almost feels like each season is three seasons because we're also dealing with the season that goes along with it in terms of the social media of it at all. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think that, you know, there have been instances, obviously, like Kelly Dodd in Orange County, at times the women on Potomac, where it feels like the cast themselves are creating and participating in some of the toxic narrative that already exists within large parts of the Bravo community. And that can be tough because then it splits your focus of like, should I be paying attention to what is going on the show or should I be paying attention to what's going on social? And if obviously the show has taken place several months ago or a year ago and social media is happening 5 seconds ago, how do I process all of this? Like, and how do the women process it? Like, that's one of the reasons why the reunion is so interesting, typically, because it is the realization not only of holding another person accountable for their behavior or having to process and hold myself accountable, but with the recognition and understanding of which moments from the season the audience liked and which moments from the season the audience really wants to see litigated over the course of three episodes. And that can leave a person feeling a couple different things. It makes me not like suspicious of what's going to happen with the Salt Lake City reunion. Certainly not hopeful, but yeah. It leaves me having a fair amount of pause about how they're going to figure out Salt Lake. I think I would feel better if we knew what the fuck happened to Heather's eye. I think this game of Clue has exhausted itself out.
Yeah, so. like, I mean, you know, you're speaking about this, you know, you have a show about this speaking so intelligently, and then they kind of do this shit where it's just the most like demeaning to the fans, to the viewers that actually put their time and energy into this. And I feel like, man, Heather, especially because she's a self-admitted fan of Bravo from day one, is that like she should know this shit wouldn't fly. Like she should know this is beneath the audience. Why are you treating us like children all of a sudden? That doesn't make sense to me. And it goes to like the frustration I have in watching this turn into a game after all these seasons instead of a documentary on women's lives.
Well, I don't know how much of a, it's like hard to figure out how much of a documentary it could be because the universe of Housewives is artificial in the idea of like, we are inside a very specific bubble when we cannot discuss the reunion. We have to say when I was in New York or when I was in LA and when we cannot necessarily.
And we have casting now. We have full on casting
totally.
That are not tethered to each other, you know?
Yeah. And when we have to talk about the cast as a friend circle, but obviously as seen on Salt Lake and aspects of Potomac and obviously Beverly Hills, like some of these women truly hate each other. So like even pretending that conflict resolution is an option for some of these circles is a wild, slightly asinine choice. So it's like interesting to try to figure out how the landscape of Housewives will continue to adapt and change. And what's happening first? Are we adapting to them or are they adapting to us?
I think they would want us to adapt to them, and I don't think that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. The thing is, though, you got me off my point, though.
Oh,
take
I'm sorry.
Us to no. Take us to what led up to starting Andy's Girls. I want to know what like you were like. Did you hear a podcast and you're like, I can do that? Like what? Because now, how many years has it been? I want like take us to that first month where like you decided I'm going to do it. This is what it's going to be called. Like what made you? Did somebody inspire you to do it?
So AG has been around for, we are going to be coming up on the 400th episode in this spring. So we're talking like, I think at that point it will be a solid 7-ish years, which is psychotic when I say that out loud. But it really starts.
I did the Meredith Marks when saw the Heather's black eye.
Yeah.
I thought it was 5 years. It's 7 years.
No, I think it's seven because I remember when we first started, like I've been an event consultant for many years. And I remember the event that I was working on and trying to figure out how to juggle like recording AG with, you know, a 14-hour day producing this thing for a bajillion people. But it started because I would talk frequently on Facebook, may its memory be a blessing, back when that was a thing, with friends.
Oh, wait, so you were in like a Facebook group for Housewives?
No, just talking on my wall or whatever about Housewives and constantly posting stuff and would have frequent conversations with like people from college and whoever else and had a lot of conversation with a friend from college, Damian Bellino, who is my fellow OG.
Who's still on the show to this
constantly,
day.
Constantly, yeah. He's my fellow OG of the AG. And one day I just said like, do you want to come over and just record and see what happens? And at the time I was consulting for an organization and they were doing like a pot for journalists and they were organizing an event to teach people how to podcast. And I started thinking, oh, a podcast could be interesting. And I didn't know what the fuck I wanted to talk about. And then I realized like all I want to talk about is Housewives. So I invited Damian over to my apartment and I borrowed a recorder and from a colleague. And we just hit record.
Do you remember what the show was like, what season you were on of what, like what was the conversation on the first episode?
I don't, although what I love is hearing from AGs who continue to go through the archives and who are like messaging me and saying like, it's so funny. The person, like I'm standing for LVP at that point, or I'm screaming at Damian about how Bethany is an angel for however many years. and it's interesting to see the ways, you know, the catchphrase of AG, aside from being the people's couch, is like the idea of the mission of AG is normalize changing your mind based on new information. And so I think it is a healthy thing to, of course, have affection for certain housewives, but really change a person's opinion or the ways that I use my voice as time has gone on. And the wild thing about Andy's Girls is that we had no idea of what the pod was going to be. I truly had like no long-term agenda of just like, we're just going to talk for an hour and maybe we'll put it up somewhere and maybe we'll not. But the actual scope of Andy's Girls, like the conversation about psychology and understanding behavior and connecting our own experiences through the world of Housewives, has not changed since the very first episode. Like the ways that we talk about these things may have changed as we change 7 years later, but it's still the same kind of show in terms of being stream of consciousness, connecting with like the nitty gritty.
Did that first show feel right? Do you remember the feeling it gave you? Did you like, oh, that this works?
Yeah, I just felt like this is the thing that I want to do. Like, I really thought at one point, you know, like, oh, I shouldn't, because I'm, you know, politically active and socially active. And, you know, at that point was doing a lot of political, social, community style work here in New York. And I thought maybe it'll be something to do with that. But like at the end of the fucking day, like that's all fine and good. And I'll talk about that in like text messages or someone. I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about Shannon Bedore and the ways that my queen has survived, the ways that Shannon Bedore is a survivor.
Wait, real quick. Did you see Shannon Bedore's photo the other day?
Yes,
where
I did.
She was like, had to be exited out of the Rose Bowl. And she's like, she's splayed out on a dental chair. I was like, this lady is so brave. She'll post a picture of herself looking. She'll be like, she was like, wasn't a good day for me. I had the most. I was like, it's the wildest picture just because there's no vanity in it at all, which I truly appreciate. You know, it's a very classic Shannon Bedore picture.
Yeah, Shannon like doesn't understand that other people see things and she posts them online. And then when she gets comments, she's like, what's happening? Like she assumes that we understand the, you know, behavior and choices behind either her photos or her grid or whatever else. And I fucking love that about her. Like
Kathy Hilton in a way. It's a different form of Kathy Hilton in terms of just the social media usage. Like Kathy Hilton will just like call out like, Rick, call me like an Instagram post, you know, and Rick doesn't follow the person she's telling, you know, Rick's like, okay. So Shannon Bedore, so you at the end of the day, you are still loving doing this show, though. That's the other thing I wanted to know is after 7 years, you know, and Bravo's gotten so large in so many ways, and I'm sure you can't have agreed with all of the ways it's gotten bigger. Is there ever a point of like, I want to move on to like other shows. I want to move on to other networks. What keeps you with Bravo?
Because I love it. I really do. It's that love changes. Sometimes it evolves in different ways. Sometimes that love can include a certain amount of like emotional disconnection if I am being forced to watch like bad TV, which is inevitable over 7 years of time, that there are going to be entire seasons that I'm like, this is a wash. I think the thing is that like I really am at my core a TV person. I love to watch TV. I can watch 4 different shows at once. Like a binge to me is like a genuine afternoon. I do not feel that way about movies.
No, I talk the same way about TV. And they're like, what's your special talent? I'll be like, sometimes I can watch like 10 different episodes of different shows all in one day.
That's
and my mind can like keep it all in there, man. Like I will. And I realize that only place for that talent is like podcasting in a way, or finding a way to talk about this thing that I've loved since a kid, which is the television. It sounds like you have the same love for it. What are you loving on Bravo right now? Oof, like what is Jesus. Out there right now that you're like, damn, this is way better than Salt Lake. I think there's an obvious answer, but.
Yeah. I mean, I did a top 25, a special episode of AG of the top 25 moments of 2022 with more than a little bit of sass. And my number one top moment was not Homeless and Toothless, which came in at number 2. My number one top moment, because it just seemed honestly the most honest as I like came up with this list, was Miami Is Here to Slay. Because I think for many of us, Miami is the remembrance and the realization of why we love the universe of Housewives and why we love Bravo, because even though we're dealing with like really intense, complicated stuff when it comes to like Julia and where she sees herself as a mother and as a wife, and obviously Lenny and Lisa blowing up, there's a lot of intense stuff. We've seen Alexia's family go through so many challenges. There's a lot of intense, shocking stuff or sad things.
You guys, today's podcast is sponsored by our good friends at Rocket Money. Now, Rocket Money is a product that I actually use. I talked about it last week as well, and I'm so psyched that they are back with us again this week. Now, you are in a new year, and you gotta have goals in your new year. And a lot of people's new goals, myself included, is to manage my money better, to have an actual budget. to budget better, to save money. And that is where Rocket Money comes in handy. Rocket Money, formerly known as Truebill, is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending and helps you lower your bills all in one place. This is actually fascinating. Over 80% of people have subscriptions they forgot about. I do this all the time. Like, you know, a streaming service you bought to watch just one show on, and that free trial that you forgot to cancel, so they keep charging you and you just don't know about it. Rocket Money will quickly and easily identify your subscriptions for you so you can stop paying for the ones that you don't want. Rocket Money makes canceling subscriptions as easy as a click of a button. Guys, that's as far as my brain works, just clicking buttons, and that's why Rocket Money is so dang easy. Simply find the subscription you don't want, and all you have to do is press cancel. And then Rocket Money takes care of the rest. They will cancel it for you. No more long hold times with customer service or tedious emailing back and forth. Get this, over 3 million people have used Rocket Money, and it saves the average person up to $720 a year. Now, they helped me cancel my Entertainment Weekly, which actually even went out of business. They helped me cancel, well, they reminded me that I have True TV, which I signed up for to interview a guest. They reminded me that I have Disney Plus. It really goes through and it makes you think about each thing that you have and if you like it and need it in your life still. So it's so useful. It's one of those things that you're going to be shocked about how many things that you didn't know you have. In fact, I have so many because I make all of the memes, you guys. And so there's all of these things that I'll pay $5 a month to help, like there's Meme Maker or things that'll Frametastic and all of these apps, but they cost money. And then I forget that I sign up for them and that I'm paying for them on a monthly basis. And so this is so easy. It lays it out right there for you on an app. So far, I've saved a couple $100 and I'm hoping to save a lot more this year. So stop throwing your money away, cancel unwanted subscriptions, and manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/sobad. That's rocketmoney.com/sobad. rocketmoney.com/sobad. That'll also be in the show description as well, but always just go check it out. Just click on it. See if it's something worthwhile to you. But I know on this one, it actually very much is. Folks, summer is just around the corner, so it's time to say goodbye to those jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. Now, I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune, and luckily, I found Quince. Now, I have a lineup of timeless pieces I want that will keep me looking fresh year after year. I got a pair of tan shorts. I got a pair of green shorts. I cannot wait to style these for summer. And I got to tell you, the quality is great because Quince has all the seasonal must-haves, like 100% European linen shirts from $30, performance polos, and versatile flow knit activewear. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman by partnering directly with top factories and passes that savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, so you can feel good about what you're wearing on every level. So upgrade your wardrobe. Go to quince.com/sobad for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/sobad to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/sobad.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So, the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Or whatever the processing might be. But I feel like the women like each other and like to be...
Oh, that Marisol Alexia... the Marisol Alexia relationship is so like really
lovely.
Like even when it's bad, like even when Marisol's like, oh, that's great how you deal with Peter. Peter's a good guy. You know, like it's really, but at the same time, you're like, oh, those are two really best friends. Those are, you know, you recognize that relationship as opposed to the relationship between Heather and Jen, which I sometimes don't recognize. But Miami really does bring it back to these ladies that seem like they genuinely respect each other for the most part, or they're giving each other space and grace and all of those buzzwords. But they're also, the other end of it is that, like, this is the glossiest show Bravo has on right now. Mm. It is cinematography is off the charts, but it still feels familiar. And like you said, what we initially fell in love with the Housewives. And that's why people are like, why don't they have that on Bravo? I'm like, because it's so good, because it gets people over to Peacock, because we talk about it and go, there is something special happening over here. And you do have to pay a couple bucks to see it and be a part of the conversation for right now. So of course it would be over there.
Yeah, it is equally escapist and connective, and it's just really fucking fun. And I think,
who's your favorite character?
I cannot believe this is like, okay, I'm going to tell you.
Oh, you're going to say Lars? Oh.
I'm going to tell you what the genuine thing, because I cannot keep my eyes off of her, is that I said, and people can go back into the AG archives, that Larsa Pippen was one of the worst one and done housewives of all time. She was terrible. She hated it. I hated watching her. We were in agreement. And the way that she has shined like a goddamn star, where I don't even care what she's saying or doing,
it's because
I just want more.
It's because the ass is so huge. You can't take your eyes off that.
No,
looks ridiculous. No, I'm joking.
It
but
is Larsa
what I am
being
saying,
like, go to the bank. I know the people to talk to. Like, Lisa, yeah. I'm going to call you later so we can really talk. Yeah. Like, off camera so I can help you. It's her being funny and shitty and wonderful.
I love that she's like, I love that she is proud of, like, this is the first place I've paid for with my own money. And I like that. And I like that she has this soft voice. It's like this like, hi, I'm Larsa. Like, it's like a really, it's very unique in terms of vocal range. And I don't mean that as a joke. I mean that really interesting, because she has pointed opinions and she has like sometimes this blank stare. But you'd be a sucker to think that there's not a lot going on there in her head, because there is.
Yeah, she yells with a whisper, which I can't get
enough
of. Yeah,
which is really interesting. Yeah. It's like, and it, to see that pitted up against Lisa, who doesn't understand what a mortgage is and yells with a yell. What is your take on the Lenny-Lisa situation? I just, you know, all these articles are coming out where Lenny's like trying to win in the Instagram of it all. And that's just never going to happen. Mm-hmm. But also saying like, you know, I was an abused husband, blah, blah, blah. It's not going to happen at this point, Lenny. You should pack it in. But what do you see from a relationship perspective going on right now this season between Lenny and Lisa?
I mean, it's hard to see it as anything but, honestly, the way that Larsa is describing it, which is to know that this is going to be a very, very difficult road for Lisa, because I think it is obvious that she was all in. And what does it mean to the future of her life when Lenny decides he is fully all out? And like the most, the like saddest, almost sweetest part of the last episode is when the women are talking about Lisa being like, do you think that they're sleeping with each other? And I forget who said this in a confessional, if it was, I really honestly forget, but it was like not a question of like if they're fucking, but where.
Yeah, it's, yeah. I think it was Marisol actually that potentially said that, but it's right. Like, well, it kind of reminded me a little bit of, I don't know, you did watch White Lotus, right? Season 2.
Oh my God, millions.
It reminded me of Tanya after she, you know, like shot all that, and she goes, is Greg cheating on me? Like, you know, after she had like, of course, like there, of course something's going on. Like, you know, is Greg doing something behind my back? And it reminded me very much of Lisa kind of, but also from a female perspective, this happens, like, you know, this is literally this guy trading in for a newer model. Like, I'm sorry, but it doesn't look like anything other than that. So he can bitch about being an abused husband all he wants, but this truly legitimately makes me sad, because this life that she invested her looks and her youth into has no payback, or, you know, she doesn't have a 401k invested with Lenny. Like, this isn't going to pay her dividends by giving Lenny her youth and innocence.
Well, I think it gets into the idea of like ideally, a woman, a person in a relationship always has an escape plan, like your own money pocketed away, the ability to leave if you want and or need to. And I think what's so devastating is, aside from the money that Lisa obviously is making with Housewives, I don't know that she has that. And she talked prior to the divorce announcement, you know, kind of blowing up during filming, about like her doing the finances, like she was the one doing that. And I just am nervous for her, because I think it's something that my dad, who was a civil litigator for many years and worked, you know, with couples through divorces, told me in, I want to say, high school. He had two pieces of advice. One was like, always make your own money so that you can leave at any time, and learn how to play golf so that you can golf. You can join the guys or whomever on the, you know, and one of those things happened. The other absolutely did not. But it's the make sure that you have the ability to make that choice, and also make sure that you have the ability to survive if it's made for you.
That is such good advice, but it almost makes me sad too, of like seeing the social media of it all, of like Lisa was posting, like, I guess she's dating allegedly some financial guy, and everybody's like, you go girl. And I'm like, the you go girl should be like, Lisa, you know, like, this is your life. You don't need another finance bro. You don't need, like, you don't need that check coming in. I mean, I know, I guess she does, to keep up a certain lifestyle, but it was like, no, that's not, I was like, oh man, that's not the answer. That's just going to get you back in the same situation you were with Lenny. And like, that's the part that, like, sometimes I'm like, will these ladies, and that's what will keep me tuning in, will they learn these lessons that we sometimes see so clearly? We don't see it clearly for our own lives, but we see it for theirs.
Well, I mean, that's a great point. And I also think, you know, when it comes to potentially traditional marriages, relationships with like gender norms that fit that ideal, how outdated some people may think that they are, it gets into the idea of like, she has the right to make that choice. Ideally, she has learned in terms of what kind of financial investments or savings or decisions that she's going to make in the future. But also, if she's not inventing the world of the finance bro. If she is moving on with someone, and part of what she finds attractive is this person being attractive, and maybe a part of what she finds attractive is their own success and their own independence, that's, I think, one of the reasons why I find Housewives so engaging, because I don't know that I would either be in that position in which to make that choice or make that choice for myself. And, you know, we talk about wanting to understand these women or being critical of the decisions that they make. But I also think like, it's just so interesting to watch someone with a different life than my own, which doesn't necessarily need to be based on finances. It can just be based on the priorities of what she sees stability in how she views stability in a relationship. Like, I don't want to take away from the fact that if someone can financially provide for you, that can be a sense of comfort and stability and safety. And yet the ways they can take it away from you, punish you by removing that, obviously is very destabilizing. Like, all of those choices, I don't necessarily begrudge her for them. I just genuinely wish her the best. But I also think, like, it's really fucking interesting to watch these dynamics play out.
Oh, and what I think, you know, how it's presented as a story, too, is so great, because we already know the end result. So each episode, they tease us at the end, and they tease us, and so you're seeing all of these things of like, oh, Lenny, you're losing weight. Is it for my account? Oh, my God. And you see these things she says, and each one you're like, fuck. Oh, you always are so well thought out. But I want to get, what was your gut? Like, what was your first react? Give me the unfiltered Sarah, without any kind of like really thought out response. When you see that Formula One video with the Lenny, with the girl, and Lisa comes up to him and she's licking her lips, was there a first initial reaction besides the, well, as women, I can see that we get heated, and like, was there a very emotional reaction to that video?
Yeah. You know, I think all the things that everyone was saying about it, I think it's one thing to hear Lisa describe this fucking lady licking her lips and really... But to see it, I was like, you fucking bitch. Like, it's just really shitty and terrible. And there are other words that I could use that I'm thinking in my head that are quite illustrative that other people can decide to think about as well. I just think it's just, it is the nastiness of it all that is one of the many reasons so many of us, the vast majority of people watching, are so supportive of Lisa, because this is really the worst case scenario, to be so deeply disrespected publicly and privately by your husband, but now by this fucking whatever, you know, like, who do you think you are? You're days in, but except of course she's not.
But isn't it crazy coming off the seasons of Beverly Hills, Salt Lake, and now Miami, that we have another scene that the cameras didn't capture, but of like an iPhone did. Like, at least with this, we actually get to, you know, we got to describe it. Now we got a visualization of it where, you know, I know they weren't probably filming at the time, but we got this actual, well, they were actually. So we got the actual visualization from an iPhone, and it's really helpful. And that's why these moving images from the show, I'm just so curious, like, with all of these scenes not being shown or not being, you know, not being caught by cameras. But, you know, I don't know. I just think everybody have their iPhones up at all times.
Yeah, I also think what's different about Miami is, like, she freaking described it. We didn't get that in Aspen. We don't know what
happened.
That's
true.
We don't know what happened with Heather's eye. But Lisa explicitly was like, this thing happened. And then we happened to have the video of it. We knew. We already knew.
You're dead on. You're dead on. Okay, so... we're wrapping up here because, you guys, we've got a whole hour long show tomorrow. You get moment.co slash Andy's Girls, right? That's where you get the $15 tickets. I want you guys to be there. There's going to be a chat, I believe, as well. There'll be a chat up, I believe, since it's StreamYard. Is that correct? So you guys will be able to chat along with us. And I'm really excited about this because I think we really have great conversations and it's going to be a lot of fun. I think we've got some fun things planned, and Emily D. Baker, of course. But yesterday, I don't know if you got to see this yet, coming on the heels of Beverly Hills, the three witches, I mean, Erica Jane and Diana, and the double toil and trouble, Rinna, Diana, and Erica got together for one of the weirdest, I don't know, they were doing an Instagram live, and it was so like, hey guys, what's going on? And they were all trying to be funny and witty. Did you have any, like, coming off the season, did this make you feel anything, seeing the three of them together?
Yeah, I felt bad. I felt dirty and bad, and also completely not surprised that Diana's attributes would be what Lisa and Erica Jane would not only seek but celebrate. Of course, they are meant to be with each other. I hope one of them is back. My guess is that two will be. But, you know, I think Garcelle said it best, which is like, I'm done. We don't need to talk about her anymore. We're done.
Yeah. I mean, talking about one and done, maybe she'll have a Larsa thing and come back 10 years later and show us a different side of Diana. But I don't think and also I kind of just get that feeling with Erica. Sometimes you watch how she acts in these videos and I feel like, I don't know, I sometimes just, I wonder, like, is Diana just bankrolling Erica at this point? Or does Diana have to bankroll friends? You know, those people in your life, like, it's just like, this is a theory I have that, like, some people take care of other people and, you know, you get their allegiance, their agreement, you know, and that's why I feel like Diana's like, you know, I won't be back next season. And they're like, yeah, of course you will, girl. Yeah. You let us stay at your Hawaii. Like, they're that supporter of, like, when we were like auditioning for high school plays and people are like, I don't think I'm gonna get the part. They're like, of course you will. You are so talented. Like, are they have to be Diana's yes men? And Diana gives them like vacations and things like that. Like, she actually provides them with goods and sundries.
That's a good question. I mean, it's like the marketplace of friendship. Like, I think many friendships are transactional. They're not necessarily as explicit as what I think we assume is going on over there. But yeah, I mean, what do you like in someone? Consistency, stability, and they're fun. And I think Diana has a lot of fun to give. I think she is very good at supplying fun because she has so much money that she doesn't necessarily need to have anything else when it comes to like her relationships with other people. I think she's probably seen by many people as very generous and very fun.
And Diana, we just, if you're listening, we just want to say we love you and your lawyers, and we are so happy to have never gotten any kind of communication via any of them.
I was named in her court documents, which was really also fun when she...
Wait. You were named in the court?
They used one of the pieces that I wrote for the Daily Beast as like an example of whatever, which was fascinating. Kiki, the talk of shame, told me. I was like, what happened? And she's like,
That's the kind of publicity you can't buy. That to me is truly incredible and also really frightening that we've gotten to that point with Housewives. The party, by the way, tomorrow, 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, is called a New Beginnings Party, which is a reference to Real Housewives of Miami, because Larsa gets her apartment in the sky that she's always dreamed of, and she's paying for it with her own money. It's a New Beginnings Party, and it turns out wild and crazy, and hopefully tomorrow night will turn out wild and crazy for us as well. I would ask you what your 2023 resolutions are and stuff like that, but I have a feeling we might even talk about that tomorrow. And there's a lot of other fun surprises that are in store. But I mean, Sarah, these are, you know, really effortless conversations for me. I'm so glad you were able to come on each other's shows, and you always broaden my mind and how I think about these things. And I'm sure I do the same for you. So
you absolutely do. And Ryan Bailey, I was talking about this during the meet and greet with an AG who's really excited about the show tomorrow. Also tonight, maybe, depending on when you're listening to this, Thursday.
Yeah.
But they were talking about the fact that you often make like kind of self-deprecating jokes about being the top layer of discussion and not getting into the heart of the matter, which is so absurd to me, because every time that we talk about Housewives, your focus and your instinct is to have those kinds of nuanced conversations. I think you don't give yourself
enough
credit.
That's just with you. That's just with you. That is just with you.
No, because I hear of it from other people who are like,
I think it's easier to paint yourself as a clown. And you know, I've done that a lot my whole life. But what fascinates me is, of course, the laughter and all this stuff, but really is the deeper conversations. That's what I'm usually attracted to, is the bigger ideas, you know, and those people that you can have them with. And what I think we both love is that everybody provides a different perspective. You know, everybody provides this kind of really unique stance that what you said earlier, what your show is all about, is kind of this flexibility of making it normalize changing your opinion about somebody. And that's what I think is awesome about these shows, is that I said, yeah, I really passionately dislike Rinna right now, but like, who knows? Like, I mean, I'm pretty sure with Rinna it'll be solid no, but you just never know though. Like, I loved Heather those first two seasons, and I'm passionately disliking her this season.
Oh, are you passionately disliking her? Oh, we will get into that.
Oh, yeah, big time. Yeah. So, but anyways, tomorrow, guys, I want you to join with us to party moment.co/Andy's Girls, $15 a ticket, which you get a week to watch this thing. And there's going to be games at the end, and there's going to be a whole to do. I think it's really cool. And also just come support us. Come support Bravo. Come support actually starting the year with friends on the right foot. And I hope to see a lot of you guys there. And listen, like, this is because I'm going to do one of these things down the line, too. And hopefully Sarah will come on mine. And hopefully you guys will come to that one because you enjoyed this one so much. So Emily D. Baker, also the person you want to see tomorrow night in regards to what is happening on January 6th. I love that this is completely taken over any thoughts of the insurrection for me. I'm like, Jen Shaw, baby. That's the new Jan 6th.
Literally, I forgot. was like,
I think this is true, and we'll probably talk about this tomorrow too. Sarah will potentially be at the courthouse for Friday's party, I mean trial thing, and that is true, right? Sorry. But also I want to know, Andy's Girls comes out on Sunday, so potentially whatever happens on Friday will be in Sunday's episode, correct?
Yeah, I actually am going to be doing a deep dive about all things Schadenfreude on Friday, which will be out probably Saturday if I survive it. And it is going to be a wild ride. I don't know how if I'm going to be in the room where it happens or not. So they didn't. I literally called the courthouse to be like, so any special media arrangements? And
or just like when are student rush tickets? Are you guys offering $20 front row seats? What are you doing?
I've never been to federal court aside from walking past it. And I literally was like, it felt like I was calling to make a dinner reservation. I was like, do you have a recommended time of arrival or anything I should I wear? Anything special? Do you have a dress code? Like it was.
Is it business casual? I'm forgetting.
Cocktail?
Is it casual Fridays at the courthouse? Is it? I mean, because also I would love to dress you up in something Bravo related. Like if you could.
That sentence.
Sarah's always classy and stuff like that. But if I go.
Now he's touching his
chest. I want to dress you. No, it's not a pretty woman day. Like I want to.
Oh my God. Can I get $5,000 at the end? Because. No, tell me. What did you want? What do you
no,
want?
No, I was like, I just think it would be great if you wore every piece of Bravo merchandise you have and you'd go in there like that. I mean, it's going to draw a little attention, sure. But then, and you never break eye contact with Jen Shah. So if she looks at you, you're looking at her. You look at like Coach Shah too. He's probably going to be there. It's going to be a who's who. Do you think Heather Gay or Meredith Marks will be there? And what will they be wearing?
That's such a good question. I think honestly, and this isn't even me attempting to be shitty, so take that. But I think that it's going to depend on whether or not Bravo's filming. And I don't mean that in a way that's like strategic or dismissive of their choices to attend to maybe support their friend. But I wonder, like, is Bravo filming anything the day before, or are they just going to be like picking up footage from other people? Like, will they have a crew there?
And you'll know that immediately. When you're there, what's going to be so exciting is that you'll know immediately if they're filming outside. You know,
filming or audio allowed. Our phones are going to be taken, and I will figure out a way to survive an hour or whatever without mine. But I think that's the question. But I also think because there's been so much confusion about Bravo's previous statements of like separating from Jen after the plea change, and then I guess asking her to the reunion, and now not knowing if she's doing a separate sit down or whatever else. Like, I think that is kind of up in the air of how Bravo is going to cover this, or are they not? Like, is it going to be, you know, the women, because Jen likely won't be on next season, spoiler alert. How are the women going to address this at the reunion after the fact? The reunion was filmed weeks ago. Like,
they're probably just going to have like bartenders from like, hey, that's the bartender from San Diego. Like they're probably just rushing to fill seats. Like you probably are in the reunion at this point.
I am in the reunion. Yep. I play the part of the black guy. I come out, I do a little dance. It's interpretive and fabulous. And then I call it a day. Yeah. It's going to be interesting. And I also wonder, because Jen is such a question mark, because she has done things on social media after the plea change and and on the show after, you know, when at the time she was preparing for trial, that just seems so absurdly self-sabotaging in nature.
If you're a friend or family, take her phone away on Wednesday nights. Like, what were you thinking letting her like pop off like that?
Well, and joking about it, what was the name of that party? Like, it was gonna be like a whore party or something. What was the name of like strippers?
Oh yeah, GT.
Garbage.
Yeah, like
garbage. I forget.
Yeah, garbage trash whore.
I forget what it was, but like even joking about that, it's the persona of Jen. It's Jen trying to be consistent with the persona that she created either in real life and or on the show. And how do you continue that persona when a consequence of that might be absolute legal action, absolute legal consequences, because Bravo viewers aren't the only people watching these episodes. And, you know, like when it comes to salvaging a reputation, exactly what is the reputation that in the best of times Jen would want us to believe? Like, how does fun look to Jen Shah when we know the cost of it to victims, how it was paid for, but also like the light of it all? The lightness of Jen Shah is fascinating to unpack.
You got to get in that courtroom. Now it's not even like you got to get in there.
But you know what?
You're got to get in there.
Ryan, I'm not a morning person.
Tell me what we need. Like, can you? Oh, that's it. You're not. I'll buy you a Starbucks gift card. You get to that thing.
I'll take
you give
it.
Yourself like a.
No, I don't want.
Independent creator. Yep.
By the
yep,
way, you know I'm going to get a text later of like, where's that Starbucks gift card?
Right? Give me that $5. I'll get a third of a latte. I don't know. It was supposed to be an afternoon session, and now it's 10 in the 10 morning, but doors open. Again, I don't even know if that's like an appropriate way to
doors
say
doors open.
I don't know.
Hey, is there an open? But you know, you got to figure in the opening act. They're going to go on
right.
first.
I'm
and
like,
then,
can
Jen,
I sit
you know,
in
like,
the mess?
Who's opening?
Or is
like,
there
who's
an
opening?
Orchestra? Is there like premium? Like, how do I? And is Jen, Jen going to talk
I'm
to people
check.
After? How's this? Yeah. Are tickets still available? Or are you checking?
I'm checking StubHub right now.
Yeah. Go to TodayTix and see.
Yeah.
And also, a genuine question that I had for someone was like, is it wedding? I've been to court before when my dad, I like remember my dad was like doing something with like people from law school. So he was, even though he was a lawyer, he was like advising them and like being a judge for like mock trial or stuff. So I remember that. Yeah. When I sit in court, is it wedding? Is there a bride side, groom's? Like, what does it mean if I sit on Jen's side? Jenny, I really have no idea. I can't ask my father. He would yell at me.
If you sit on Jen's side, you're canceled, Sarah. You're canceled. If you wind up over on Jen's side, you're canceled. Okay, this is just a warm-up, you guys. The real show is tomorrow night, but I think this gave you a good impression of the hilarity and heart and mind and body that will be on display tomorrow night. Moment.co/Andy's Girls. $15 tickets. I want to see you baddies there. And Sarah, thank you so much. I will talk to you again tomorrow.
I can't wait. And Ryan, you're so fantastic at this. And I know you literally seem to have some sort of bodily reaction to compliments, but I'm so appreciative of every chance we get to connect. I'm so excited to do this live show with you. I'm very excited it's not going to be rebroadcast, so we can be absolutely
very actually
clear
really cool.
in some of our statements and feedback as to what we're watching on Housewives, which is... It's going to be like the after show that no one else can access except for ticket holders, which does free us up, I think, a little bit. So maybe some of the words I didn't use tonight.
I'll ask you some of these questions again tomorrow. Okay, Sarah, have a great rest of your evening, and we will see all of you guys tomorrow. Bye.
Bye.
Betches.